Before we begin, let's take a moment to put our hands together to worship the Compassionate One, the Sublime One, the Undefeated One, the Tathagata, by chanting the Namaskara 3 times all together and with me. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. With permission from the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Mahasangha, let's begin. I want you to imagine a person who has nothing, not a penny or a cent to their name. And let's say this person, can't talk, can't walk, can't lift up an arm. If you were to ask them, what can you give? What would they say? They don't have any money, so they can't give anything money-wise. They can't move, so they can't give anything physically by helping out. So how could they give? The smart ones among you will say, well, they can think. They'll be able to think. They can think. And that thinking, they'll be giving some good thoughts. But let's say they're a very negative person. That they only see the negative side of things. They only see the bad of people. Now what can they give? If you really looked at it, there's very little they can give. Very little, or if you can even go to the extent and say they can't give anything. Because for you to be able to give, you must first have. For you to give energy, you must first have what? Energy. For you to give anything, you first must have it. In this world, everyone is trying to do one thing, and we all know what that is. Everyone's trying to, to be happy. And strangely enough, because they want to be happy, they try to give happiness to others. However, they don't have happiness. They don't have happiness. So they're trying to give something that they do not have. And they'll do it in various different ways, by giving views, by, helping another person, by complimenting another person. But in their minds, they are just as hurt as the other. I think one of the best examples, the best analogies you can give is, if you are drowning, how can you help another drowning person? If you are drowning, how can you help another drowning person? See, let's say if we took the example of the Titanic. When the Titanic sunk, if you are in help, if you are in need of help, how can you give help to another? You're in the water and you can't, you know, you can't keep afloat. You know, you're paddling away, you're trying to find something to hold on to. Until you have found something to hold on to, until you are stable, how can you help another person? How are you able to help another person? Happiness can only be given if you have it. Happiness can only be given if you have it. But yet in this world, you know, there's only a handful of people who know how to truly be happy. Only a small handful of people who truly know how to be happy. And those are the people who understand the truth. Those are the people who understand nature. Those are the people who understand the Buddha's teachings, the Buddhist philosophy. You see, I was thinking about this the other day, and you know how before we came to the monastery and we tried to understand them, you know how sometimes we went and tried to help someone else's problems? You know, a friend is in need. You know, they're currently suffering from, something has happened to them. They've lost something very, very, very dear to them. They've lost it and they're in need. You go up to them and you try to solve their problem. But what you don't realize is that problem that you're trying to solve somehow becomes part of you and it becomes your problem, and now you're suffering just as much as the other. You make that problem your problem. See, you know, if you took a job that requires you to, you know, ask and solve problems, so for example, you know, if you went up to a psychologist and that psychologist listens to your problems, asks you what's wrong, and tries to help you solve it. But if they somehow make that problem theirs, if that problem becomes theirs, because, you know, you can only give happiness if you have it. You can only give happiness if you have it. Or at least if you know how to get it. Or else you'll be solving the wrong sort of problem. Although you'll be giving a temporary solution to the wrong problem. You'll be giving the temporary solution for the wrong problem. So when will you ever solve the right problem? Never. You'll be solving it again and again and again and again to the point that, well, there'll be no more time left for you to solve. The inevitable end. So if you truly want to help someone else, if you truly want to give someone happiness, the first and foremost thing that you must do is what? Be happy yourself. The first and foremost thing that you must do is to find happiness yourself. If that is so, if you have found it, now it's easy. You know, sometimes, especially in the monastery, we're very selfless. And that's something that I really do love about the monastery. We're selfless. We sacrifice time and energy for sometimes people that we've never met before. And that's the beauty of the monastery. We sacrifice our time and energy and everything that we have. Whether it's a monk, anagarika, anagarika, shravaka, shravaka, even the devotee that comes today to the monastery is selfless. In one way or another, is selfless. We're very in the monastery, at least. We're very nice people who try to help other people in some sort of way, trying to, you know, get them to understand and try to get them to be happy. But sometimes what we fail to do, or something that's, you know, maybe not on our priority list, is our own salvation. Sometimes we could be more focused on our responsibility than on our own salvation. Because at the end of the day, your mind has the ability to make your mind happy. Has the ability to take your mind to your salvation. I'm saying yours, but there is no, it doesn't belong to you. However, that mind can only affect you. Your mind can only affect you. The person on your left and right, you have no idea. You have no idea. So if you were to dedicate your life to make someone else happy, without trying to find your own salvation, you are doing something that you can almost argue to say it's futile. Because I cannot control your minds. I can never control your minds. I can't make you think. I can't make you practice. All the thing I can do is what? Give the environment. Give the things you need. So for example, if you're hungry, what can I do? Let me go to the kitchen. And probably there'll be some roti, hopefully, by then. And give you some roti or some rice or something, and you can be full. If you're tired, I can say, hold up. I can go and organize a place for you to sleep. Or, you know, if you're sick, you know, we've got a hospital, I can say, you know, wait, I'll bring your doctor to you. If you need clothes, I don't have many clothes. However, I can try to find something. The four requisites I can try to do, that can be to help your environment. As well as, when you are suffering from a problem, I can try to show you the solution. Show you the solution. Show you the reality of it. But again, I can only give you, Your noble association can only do what? Create the environment. But the thinking happens there. The contemplation happens there. For example, you know, I mean, it's the same thing with the four requisites as well. Say you're hungry. I say, you know what? Okay, wait there. I'm going to go to the kitchen and see what we have. I go in the kitchen and find some rice and some stuff and I give it to you and you say, no, I don't want this. What can I do now? Say I get a plate of rice with rice and wataka, pumpkin. Don't worry, we're gonna get lots of that. What else? What else did Guru Ram Dass say that we're gonna have? Bandaka, paripu, right, dal, kakiri. And I put them all on the plate and I give it to you, and you're like, oh no. I can't have that. Do you have something better? I can go check, but if there is nothing else, all I can do is bring you the plate. Whether you consume it or not, that's up to you. I can give you a place to stay. Whether you stay in it or not, it's up to you. We go to the hospital, you're sick, we go to the hospital, I bring out the best medicine that there ever is to humanity. You know, the medicine that can cure all illnesses. Whether you take it or not, it's up to you. All the external world can do is create that environment. All that you can do to another is create that environment. Whether they use it or not, it's up to them. Same thing with the Dhamma. You know, Guru Andhru and all of our teachers and our Noble Association will give us so much. Whether we practice or not, it's not their responsibility. That's ours. You know, in the future, some of you may have students, you know, a person who's practicing under you. And you'll be able to tell them what to do, tell them what not to do. But whether they practice the path or not is up to them. All you can do is what encourage them, saying, you know, you can do this, you know, try doing this, try doing that. If this doesn't work, try this. And that's all you can do. The path can only be walked by them. So again, coming back, you can only give happiness if you have it. You can only give happiness if you have it. That's why this is why, you know, you have to focus on your salvation. You have to focus on your own freedom from your own defilements. While practicing, can you help others? Or a drowning person can never save another drowning person. You at least have to be able to float for a bit to say, I think I found a place. If you're not floating at all, how can you say anything to another? That's why it's very important. That's why it's very important for you to practice. And the best part is, you get instant rewards. The more you practice, the more happy you become, the more happy the other people around you become. Because you affect their environment. You have the ability to affect your environment. Although you may think that, you know, I'm just a single person in this massive world, you know, there's billions of people in this world, I'm just a single person. But your change can be felt by the people around you. Your change will change the people around you. For example, let's say you are a person who used to get really angry. But then you start practicing. You are contemplating. And now let's say your anger has reduced. Yes, the other people will, you know, like it that you're less angry. But also, not to forget that in the end, your change will motivate someone else to change as well. Your change will motivate someone else to change. Because then you'll have the idea and say, you know what, you know, today, you know, I'm going to go to the Valley Mall today. Are you coming? And that may be enough to encourage another person to say, yeah, sure. Or you could, you know, because of your practice, you may think, you know, I've been thinking about this recently. What are your opinions? And that could be enough to encourage them to start thinking. However, take this with a pinch of salt. Because if you artificially do it, people will start to do what? Think, well, they'll start to think that you're trying to you're overdoing it. For example, don't go up to a random person and say, are you contemplating? Because, you know, we have no idea what sort of mindset they're in. Let's take an example that you see someone reading a book, right? Say, you know, in the monasteries, most of our monastery is trying to improve on their English skills. So, you know, so some people, we will see some of our monks, they're reading some sort of English, something in English. And I'm pretty sure our Anagarikas and Anagarikas, they also do the same thing. But if you see someone reading and you go up to them and they're trying really hard, they're saying, the cat. And then they're trying really hard. And if you go up to them and say, you know, these words are made in your mind. Although you may have a good intention, at that moment, what are they feeling? I'm trying to read this. Please let me read this. Yes, I know it's in my mind. Yeah, and thank you very much. And you may not be, you know, someone who's helping at that moment. Although your intentions may be pure, you are not helping. Instead, observe. Of course, I know 100%. If any of you see someone struggling to read English, what would you do? help them. You'll probably go up and read it for them, and they'll be like, no, I'm trying to read it. But, you know, be aware. Be aware of the people around you. Be aware of the minds around you. Because sometimes, you know, if you were to, if you say, for example, someone who's trying to read like that, and if you go up to them and say, you know, it's made in the mind, it may not help them. But if you are aware, sometimes you'll find the best opportunity to help another person. Because, you know, if you think about it, and this is also a very, very good way to measure yourself as well. If your life is sailing smoothly, meaning that there's no problems and, you know, everything's going according to your plans and time and all this stuff. Understand that attaining Nibbana is now difficult for you. If your life is easy, if your life is, you know, it's all going according to a plan, you know, everything's going well, I'm not facing many problems, I don't have many issues, understand your journey to Nibbana is actually very far away. Because a smooth, a calm sea will never make a skilled sailor. You know, you must have problems in your life. If you don't face some problem, if you don't take a challenge, how do you know where you are? Something that is very common amongst a lot of practitioners is that, you know, you're in an environment where you don't get agitated too much. You know, very rarely does someone do something that will make you feel upset. So it's very easy to come to the conclusion saying what? Maybe I don't get upset. Very easy to come to that conclusion. That's why, you know, you have to take up a challenge. You know, if your life isn't easy, that is the best place to contemplate. That's the best environment to contemplate. You know, I was talking with some of our monks, you know, a couple of days back, and something that they say is what? So I was talking with Nayakhan the other day, and I was telling him, you know, for those of you who may not know who Nayakhan is, trust me, he's in a small room most of his time, right, solving problem after problem after problem after problem. Every problem that goes in the monastery is filtered through him, right? He's the solver of the monastery's problems. Some problems are big, some problems are small, but no matter, a problem's a problem. And something that when I was having a conversation with him, he was telling me that my life is not easy. I have responsibility of, you know, lots and lots of people. But I like it. My life is not easy. But I like it. I like these problems. Because I went up to him and I told him, you know, how do you do this? You know, you go, you know, this comes in, that comes in, you know, you only have 24 hours. I have 24 hours and I'm finding it difficult to cope. How are you doing this? And he says, I enjoy it. Because this rough sea is the best place for me to contemplate. This rough sea is the place that I can understand where and when and apply the Dhamma that I know. The rougher the sea, the harder I sail. The rougher the sea, the harder I sail, and the more skilled I become. And something that we're talking about is, you know, your noble associations around you. Ask them to annoy you. Ask them to, you know, annoy you. I know, yes, You know, again, take these with a pinch of salt. So don't go annoying other people unless they ask you to. But, you know, ask them to go and poke you every now and then. Why? So once you're poked, you'll be like, and they'll be like, ah, you see, there's a problem there. Ah, you know, you still got angry there, right? Let them annoy you. Let them trigger you. Because then you're able to understand where you still need to, where you have to go. If you live in a place where everyone is not doing anything, how do you know what issues you have? So allow them to come poke you whenever they feel like it. See if you get annoyed. Allow them to, you know, when you say, Ape Mahatya, can you go and do this? They say no. Allow them to say no. Why? To see if you feel what? They said no. How dare they say no to me? Let them, your noble associations, let them trigger you. Don't let your sea be calm. If you feel that your life is very easy and calm, don't let it be like that. Get yourself some problems. Ask the people around you to annoy you. See, where's the best place to be annoyed? Where's the best place to be annoyed? When you're surrounded by the solution. The best place to be annoyed is when you're surrounded by the solution. Or surrounded by the people who can give the solution. Now, because when you're annoyed, you're able to find the solution and you can get rid of that defilement. That's why you are perfectly okay. That's why you are perfectly okay. So what? You see, here's the thing. When it comes to asking your noble associations to annoy you, one thing you have to sacrifice. What's that? If you're going to ask your noble associations to, trigger you, to poke you, and to, find out your defilements, you have to sacrifice one thing. What's that? You have to sacrifice your ego. Why? Because when they poke you and they say, you still get angry. You have to sacrifice your ego and step down and say, thank you very much. Pingsudhuya. Or else, what else are you going to feel? You're going to feel like, me get angry? No. Me? No. It can't be. I only said that so you don't do it again. Or you'll come up with some sort of random excuse to justify your actions. But no, if you're truly doing this, you will, step down. You'll let your ego, put ego to a side and accept. Because don't forget, you're in the hospital. Don't forget you're in the hospital. The hospital which, you need to look for your own symptoms and solve it. You have to look for the disease and solve it there and then. If you're not doing that, then if you believe you're in the hospital and you have no sickness, then you shouldn't be in the hospital but in the mental hospital. So it's okay. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to feel, frustrated, stressed out, feel desire, aversion to lose. It's okay. See, that's you can always say the downfall of being in the monastery. Because the longer you're in the monastery, the more that you believe that you should be a person. I should be like this. And then you put up a facade thing that, I am like this. And when something happens, you have to keep on the side. So, if you feel angry, now you have to pretend you don't feel angry. But why? Because you have to protect who? This ego inside. So ask the people around you to, you know, if you think your life is, you know, smooth sailing, if you believe, you know, everything is going towards, you know, your plan that, you know, I want this to happen like this and this happening like this, I'm okay now. Ask your fellow associations, ask your noble associations just to poke up, just to agitate, to find out your weakness, to find out where you still need to practice. You know, go up to them and tell them. Literally, if you are truly a person who wants to get this done, you will go begging on your knees saying, Ane Mahatya, Ane Mahatmya, please, sir, madam, Ane Apehandra, you know, Venerable sir, can you try to help me find my defilements? Question me. Question me whenever you can. Ask me why. Ask me why. Why did I do it? And if I can't give a good answer, show me my defilements. Show me my defilements. If you think that, you know, your life is smooth sailing, no. Go to a place that you'll find your defilements. So, for example, you know, come to our school. Teach at our school. If you think your life is smooth sailing, right, and I have no problems, I don't get angry as much, come and teach at our school. Recognize your defilements. Come and take charge of, you know, our small noble heartians. Check your defilements. Now, again, that's not saying our children are amazing, but, you know, they're children. Children have the tendency to listen to adults, right? Children have the tendency to listen to adults, right? They listen and they comply and they're very obedient, right? Yeah, of course they are. In your world. In reality, children are there to help you find your defilements. Children are there. See, our monastery has an opportunity. You have an opportunity to find out your defilements. How? You come to our school, you try to teach a subject, and you see, I still get annoyed here, I get angry here. Ah, see? If your life is smooth sailing, we have opportunities to find out your defilements. Come to our school, teach our school, or look after our noble heartians, and you can find out your defilements. So ask your noble associations. You know, give a poke here, a nudge here, a word here, something here, to make sure your sea is rough. To make sure that sea is rough. But also, you have to be humble enough to accept. You have to be humble enough to accept. So actually, actually ask your noble associations to do this. Ask your noble associations to, you know, come and annoy me. Come and do something to trigger me. So you can find out your defilements. You find out your defilements, you practice. Or else, even better, you can go to your teacher and say, you know, this week I found out that I still get angry here and here and here. Help me. The one thing you have to destroy before the one, see, this is the thing, this is why the journey to Nibbana is difficult. The last thing that is destroyed, the last defilement that is destroyed is ego. Ego is the last thing that gets destroyed. But the reducing of ego makes it easier to practice. So it's almost as though, you know, that's why the Jhajna Nibbana is difficult. We have to reduce this ego that we have. But, you know, that can only be eradicated at the last moment. So, you know, it is so, you know, this journey is so, so, so practical. This journey is so, so practical. For as long as you reduce, your egos, for as long as you realize what you're doing, this journey is very practical. So you go up to again, your noble associations. Remember, these people are there for your, they're here to help you. Your people are the people around you, there to help you. So allow them. Allow them to annoy you. Allow them to agitate you. Allow them to frustrate you. To see if it works. Now, once you are frustrated, then you go straight to do what? Contemplate. There and then, contemplate. That's the beauty. Again, don't annoy anyone unless they ask you to, right? You're not going to go annoy a random person and say, you know, I annoyed you so you can find your defilement. Don't go poking another person unless they've asked you to. Unless they've asked you to. Because, you know, if you really think about it, who do you belong to? Who do you belong to? It's a good question, isn't it? Who do you belong to? Different people will give different answers. You know, I belong to my parents. I belong to my family. You know, I belong to the monastery. I belong to Sri Lanka. You know, I belong to this world. And, you know, we actually have this idea that, you know, that I belong somewhere. And what's really funny is that, you know, when you don't feel that you belong, when you don't, you know, we try to belong somewhere. And if you feel that you don't belong, what do you do? Two things. Either you change yourself to belong, or you change the environment to somewhere that you belong. You know, it's like this, right? Every mind, thanks to ignorance and attachment, we has ego. And therefore, it's always looking for a place to belong. It wants to belong somewhere. If you have someone, if you feel as though there is a someone, you are always looking for a place to be with, or to be able to, you're looking for a place to be. I think that the best analogy I think I've heard is, ego is like a car. If you have a car, you always have to look for a place to park. For example, you know, if you don't have a car, you just need to walk somewhere. Do you have to park anywhere? No, you can go to one place to another, and you don't need to care about where do I have to stop or start or whatnot. But if you have a car, now you have to be wary about, okay, do I park here? Can I park here? How much does this parking space cost? So for example, if I remember in the UK, we have parking spaces that are lettered. So, for example, on the same road, there will be like parking spaces like lettered S, R, U. Oh.
and some that are not lettered.
And when you get a parking permit, you get a permit that has a letter on it. So you can only park in that letter. So I remember, you know, sometimes when you're driving along and say you're going over here. There's an empty space right in front of it. You go driving up to it. You look at the letter. It says S. What do you have? You got an R. You go to the R space and it's all full. Yeah, and then you go to the other side of the road. You go to the U, you know, there's some empty spaces, but there's empty ones. That means anyone can park at a specific time. From 12 to 12. Oh, no. From 6 to 6, you can park. Or you can't park. Because if you have a car, you now have to park it somewhere. But a pedestrian? A person who doesn't own a car? Do they have to care where they park? No, they go from one place to the other and they will be straight okay. They'll be okay. It doesn't matter where they go. They're on their 2 feet. But if you have a car, you have to park. You know how sometimes, you know, you're in the, you know, say, in a car park. There's an empty space. But the people, the cars either side of you have parked so close to the space that you can't go inside. Have you been in that situation before? Well, you know. You know, two cars have parked and there is space, but it's not enough space for your car. So you have to be wary about space. You have to be wary about, you know, the location. It can't be too far. It can't be too far, or I have to walk. And there's so many things you have to think about because you have a car. That's why everyone looks for a house with a garage. So you don't need to care about parking spaces. You just need to go into the garage and park it there. But, you know, if you have a car, you have to park. And they say, you know, don't park in darkness. Try to park under a light, so therefore someone doesn't break in. There are many rules of parking. You know, you live long enough, you get to hear all the rules. You know, the best parking space is the worst parking spaces. If you have a car, there's so much you have to do. But if you don't have a car, does it matter? So, you know, everyone is looking for a place to park. Everyone with ignorance and attachment is always looking for a place to park. So what do they do? You know, what's the easiest thing to do is what? You're looking for a place to park. There's no parking space. So what do? You look for another parking space. You go somewhere else to find a parking space. So when the environment's not right, but ego is there, when you are looking to belong and the environment's not letting you, you decide to change the environment, saying that, no, let's try somewhere else. Let's try over here. Let's try over there. Looking for the place to park. But unfortunately, the effort that you take to find a new environment is usually just futile. Because why? You know, there is no perfect place. Every time you have to sacrifice something to find a parking space. If you want to go here, I mean, these are also spaces, but you have to sacrifice distance. You have to walk. Or the second thing you can do is what? Change this here. Change yourself. See, everyone is trying to park their cars. As long as you have ignorance attachment, you have a car to park. The question is, where are you parking it? Because once you have parked it somewhere, now you feel okay. Now you feel as though everything is going the way you wanted. You know, I have a place. You know, I have a duty. I have responsibility. This is my purpose. And you have a place to park. But don't forget, the car is still there. The car is still there. You found a place to park, but the car is still there. You know, if you have a car, you have to park. But you know what we have to realize is that this car is an issue here. We have to remove the car. We have to get rid of the car. But once you've parked it, you don't feel the need to do that because you feel that you found it. But like I said, everyone is looking for a place to park. And you know, when, you know, we've all been in a situation where, you know, you're okay. And then something happens that forces you to face a problem. For example, let's say, a good example is this. I think next week some of our children will be facing some exams. And, you know, before the exams, you know, they've parked their cars, you know, I'm currently in the monastery, learning at the school, I'm doing all that. But the moment they realize an exam, now their parking space, their comfort zone is what now? Now shaken. Now they don't know, when the environment is different. See, one of the best things to do is just to observe. You know, look at the people around you. When you realize they're facing a problem, look at what they start to do. See, it's very easy to find out if someone's under a problem. How? Because they'll be different. They'll act differently. They'll behave differently. So, you know, you'll see them behave in different ways. So, you know, if there is a car, you have to park it. If there is a car, you have to park it. And when life becomes difficult, that car has to find a place to move, to change. That car has to change. You have to check and see if you're able to do that. But here's the thing. If you have a car, there is a specific place that you have to park. But in reality, is there a specific place that you have to park? Well, let me change the analogy here. Okay. Heat. Who does heat belong to? Who does heat belong to? Does heat belong to someone? Can heat belong to someone? No, heat is something that's universal. It doesn't matter for who. It doesn't matter who has it. Heat is universal. Heat is something that affects everyone. So, for example, you know, if you are cold, for example, these ACs, these air conditioners turn on for who? These air conditioners turn on for who? That's such a weird question, isn't it? You know, these air conditioners only turn on for me. Does it? No, these air conditioners don't have a specific, you know, specific person or specific, you know, for example, you know, if anyone presses the button, the aircon will turn on. Agreed? But does it have to be a person to press the button? Does there need to be a person to press the button? No, our squirrel's over there. You know, he can come and press the button somehow. And then the aircon will turn on. The aircon will turn on. Because, you know, in this world, nothing is separate. Nothing is separate. However, if we carry it on, who do you belong to? Who do you belong to? You belong to the nature. You belong to nature. You belong to nature, right? Are you not part of nature? You are part of nature. You are part and parcel of nature. However, when I ask you, who do you belong to? You automatically have an idea that this is who I belong to. For example, the energy that you expend belongs to who? Okay. This is you. You eat, you consume meals, and you expend energy. This energy belongs to who? Who does energy belong to? Who does energy belong to? Does energy have an owner? No, this energy is universal. The energy that is expended by this person is universal, for everyone, for nature. Because why? This person will consume meals that belong to who? He's eating his meals. She's eating her meals. They're eating their meals. Energy doesn't have an owner. Energy doesn't have a specific person or thing that it has to do. Energy is just part of nature. However, when ignorance and attachment is at play, you as a person, where do you belong? Let's say this person says, you know, I belong to my family. Because of ignorance and attachment, this person can no longer give or no longer use the energy for everyone. Instead, they box themselves in. Because why? They now belong to someone, belong to a place. Therefore, they are now what? I'm only going to help who? My family. This is why, you know, you can argue and say, the most selfish people in this world is who? The most selfish people in this world is who? A mother and a father. Because energy that was supposed to be for everyone becomes focused on just 1, 2, 3 people. Energy that was supposed to be for everyone becomes so focused on 1, 2, 3 people. So now this person will work just for who? The people that he, that you know, they believe is theirs. Because ignorance and attachment makes them believe that they are someone who belongs to this. Therefore, I have to provide for this. That's why, you know, you'll work hard, earn money, and give money to who? This. You know, we'll work, you know, we'll cook and clean and do what they can for who? This is energy. This is energy that was meant for everyone. This is energy that's meant for the entire universe. See, if you have the ability to cook, who can you cook for? If you have the ability to cook, who can you cook for? You can cook for anyone who is hungry. However, if you say you belong somewhere, now who do you cook for? My people, me. I'm only going to cook for myself, you know, for this person, for that person, my wife, my children. Let's say you own a restaurant. Now I'm cooking for everyone, aren't I? Ignorance attachment's there. Therefore, you say, I'm cooking for not everyone. I'm cooking for who? My customers. Because nature isn't made for someone. Nature doesn't have ignorance and attachment. Therefore, nature is not separate for people. Say, for example, a mango tree bears fruit for who? Let's say your grandfather plants a mango seed in your garden. And now, you know, two generations after, you know, you now have a massive mango tree in your garden. And every year, it produces the most sweet, the most juicy mangoes possible. Who does those mangoes belong to? My garden, therefore it belongs to me. Let's go ask a tree, you know, mango tree, who do you provide food for? What would the tree say? I provide food? No, I've never done that. I provide food? No, I'm just doing what I can. But your mangoes are so sweet and juicy. Really? I don't know. Because the mango tree is providing for who? Let's say, you know, you take your hook and you go plucking some mangoes. Does the mango tree, you know, give you extra mangoes because, you know, it grows in your garden? And let's say some, you know, your neighbors, they try to take a very long hook and try to break some mangoes. Does the mango tree like take the mangoes away from their side? Does the mango tree care? Because the mango tree provides mango for who? The question's wrong. The mango tree is part of nature. The mangoes are for everyone. But if the mango tree decides, because they're ignorant and say, no, I belong to this, therefore this is who I'm going to give for, no one else, full stop. Aren't they? Isn't the mango tree now almost, you can almost say they are. Oh, if you were to say that mango tree is mine and can only provide for my family, that, you know, no one else can take it, you are almost stealing from the rest of nature. You are almost stealing from the rest of nature because it belongs to nature. So who do you belong to? Who do you belong to? You also belong to nature. You are part and parcel of nature. If you believe, I belong to these people, therefore I'm only going to think about these people, you know, the neighbors, let them do what they do. You know, they're going to die of hunger. It doesn't matter, because at least my people get to eat. Do you not see how selfish a mindset can become because of ignorance and attachment? Do you not see how selfish a mindset can become because of ignorant attachment? You know, as long as my people are happy, everyone else, you know, let them, you know, give them to the dogs. It doesn't matter. At least my people are happy. Because of ignorance and attachment, you take what belongs to nature and you say, this is mine. That's why you can argue and say that a mother and a father are very selfish. Okay. Your knowledge, you know, throughout your life, you have, you know, gone through so much. You have gained so much knowledge and so much experience. Who does it belong to? Your knowledge and experience belongs to who? Me. My people. So I'm going to use my knowledge to, you know, build this house all by myself. And, you know, I'm going to use my knowledge to do everything all by myself. I am not going to give a single thing to others. You're stealing from nature. Let's say you cook an amazing meal. And let's say, I don't know, what sort of things can you cook? Let's say you cook an amazing pumpkin curry. If you find that amazing, what's the first thing you do? This is for? Me and my. This is for me and my. Are you not stealing from nature? Because who does it actually belong to? It belongs to nature. If you were to surround it and you know, fence it and say, this is all mine, these are for my people, for me and for my, you're stealing from nature. Because it doesn't belong to anyone. No matter how good your cooking is, it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to nature. But because of ignorance and attachment, we block it all and say, this is only for my people, for me, for my family. So we steal from nature. This is why, you know, in the past, you know, this is why our ancestors, what they used to do is whenever they made something, they'll make sure they give it to who? The people around. Whoever needs it. Whether they know the person or not, they'll go and ask, you know, I made some vattakka hodi, you know, vattakka. Do you want some? If they say yes, of course, I'll give you some. If they say no, then it's okay. That's why, you know, in the past, you know, in the past, whenever they had a mango tree and they have mangoes, they don't eat the mangoes for themselves. They'll go around and ask, you know, I've got some mangoes. Do you want some mangoes? Because that mango tree provides mangoes for who? Everyone. But yeah, we fence it up and we say, no, this mango tree is mine. These are all mine. These are all yours. You don't come to my things. I won't come to your things. But this is nature. We steal from nature. See, the energy that runs within each and every one of us is part of nature. But yet, if you were to, because of ignorance and attachment, you block and you say, no, I'm going to only help my people. This is why I believe, you know, this is why we have to understand that you and there is no you here. This is nature. This is nature. Let nature be nature. Don't fence and make it so it's only you and my, and this is what I have, and this is all me. That's only a feeling the mind has because of ignorance and attachment. That's it. Don't steal from nature. Give nature what belongs to nature. Give nature what belongs to nature. So, work. Work for who? Work for nature. See, the only place that you can truly do this, the only place that you can truly do this, become part and parcel of nature is where? A place where everyone is selfless. A place where everyone is selfless. So even the word selfless, who is selfless? You know, it's even funny, right? If I ask you the question, who is selfless? That doesn't make sense, does it? Who? Selfless. It's like talking about polar opposites here. Like asking someone, are you hot and cold? Are you full and famished? They can't be, you know, you can't ask the question, who is selfless? No, selfless is, you know, a feature of a mind that truly understands. That's why the only person who can truly give to nature, who can truly be part of nature, is someone who has no who. Someone who is truly selfless. That's who? An arahant. That's who? An arahant. An arahant is the only person who can truly give to nature because he or she is part of nature. They are part of nature. They don't border and say, this is only for me. See, the mother will only feed who? Her children. The neighbors? Doesn't matter. The neighbors are hungry. Mother? Doesn't care. Because why? They're not part of my people. They're not mine. We have to stop stealing from nature. We have to become part of nature. We have to help nature. Because, ladies and gentlemen, you know, you are nature. Whether you like it or not, you are nature. Give to nature the maximum you possibly can. You know, that's why they say, you know, a person who has the mindset of a mother or a mindset of a father, it's very difficult for them to practice the path. Because why? They are very selfish. And that's why, you know, the mindset of a husband, the mindset of a wife is also what? A mindset that will find it very difficult to do what? To attain the salvation. Why is that? Because they've taken nature and they've broken it down, saying, this is me, this is mine, this is only, they can only belong to me. You know, they can only do something for me. You know, they should only be able to talk to me. Why are they talking to the other people? I mean, can they not? They can, but you know, this mindset says, no, they can only be talking to only these people and no one else. Why? Because they've bought it and said that this is for me. This is only mine. A smile that used to belong to the entire world gets boarded and said that smile only can be for me. A smile that used to belong to the entire world gets locked up and said that smile only belongs to me. A laugh that used to belong to the entire world gets boarded up and said that laugh can only belong to me. An image that used to belong to the entire world was boarded and said that image can only belong to me. How selfish, how more selfish can you get? Something that used to belong to the entire world, you go, snip, no more, this is all for me. We've come to a point where, you know, we are all very, you know, because of ignorant attachment, there's no other reason. No one here is doing this purposely. They don't know. Ignorant attachments are to blame here. Because of that, ego is there. Because of ego, now, you know, ego has the place to park. For example, and this is something that most of us can relate to, especially those who live in the monastery. If you find your cupboard to be messy, what do you clean? Your cupboard. If you find the cupboard next to you messy, what do you do? What do you do? Honestly, what do you do? So let's say, you know, your place is messy. What do? You clean your place. Because why? That's my place. But the person next to you, their place is messy. What do? It's not mine. You know, it's not mine. But because we're good people, what do? We go and tell them, Samaa and Mahatmi, you know, your cupboard's a bit messy. I can help you tidy up, but that's yours. That's your responsibility. Is it? Is it really? You are part of nature. That is also what? Nature. So why do you feel this is my cupboard, that's theirs? I will only look after my things. You go and you see a pen on the floor. What's the first thing you do? You pick it up and check if it's whose? Not mine. So what do? Some people will put it right back where they found it. Other people will say, it belongs to someone else. And they'll either give it to the owner or something else. But, you know, it feels different. It's not. The first thing you do is you check if it's whose. It's mine. Because why? Ego, because it's mine. It has to be. If it's mine, I'll look after it. If it's not mine, it doesn't matter. That's why public spaces, you normally have to pay someone to clean. Because who does it belong to? Not me. The monastery is different because I want to earn merits. Again, I want to earn merits. Therefore, I will sweep. But if it's not mine... For example, you clean your house. You clean your front lawn. When will you ever clean the road in front of you? Not my job. It's not mine. You know, it's, you know, let's call the people who are in charge, the street cleaners. You know, why aren't you cleaning this properly? And now you find someone to blame because it's not yours. But you are part of nature. You are part of nature. Let's say you're hungry. You're hungry, so you go and serve yourself some food and you start eating. But what about the others? What about the other person? Why just look at, I'm hungry, so I have to eat? What about the other? The person to your left and right, why happens if they're hungry? Do you ask them? See, here's a even better one, right? So, I'll take it with the example of the people in our monastery, right? So normally, you know, if our clothes have ripped, the first thing that we do is we sew it, right? We sew it or we go to someone who can sew it, right? Some people have amazing abilities to sew. Do I have that ability? Not yet. So if I have a hole in one of my robes, I'd go in and sew it. But if I see a hole in someone else, what do? Sew it. What do? It's not mine. So, you know, because we're all very good in the monastery, right? Normally what people will do is we'll just like, it's not my problem, so I'm going to ignore it. But normally what we'll do is we'll go and say, somehow, you know, I think you have a hole here, or there's like a stain here or something, then you'll show it. Why don't you go and sew it? Why don't you go and help clean, or why don't you come, you take and clean it? Because it's not mine. It's not mine. That's why this mindset of this is me, this is mine, is, you know, you're taking from nature. Because actually, you know, if there is a hole, if that hole needs to be sewn, it has to be sewn by not just you or by another person. It just has to be sewn. Let's say the prayer mat, you know, your prayer mat. Yeah. Let's say there's a small hole there. That hole has to be sewn by who? That hole has to be sewn by who? The owner, right? No, the hole has to be sewn. That's it. It doesn't matter by who. It could be by, you know, yourself. It could be by the neighbor. It could be by a random stranger. As long as the hole is sewn. But thanks to attachment, we say, no. My patkara, therefore, I have to sew it. Their patkara, so they have to sew it. I'll tell them. I cannot remind them. It's not my responsibility. Because why? You believe that, what? This is me. This is mine. This is me. This is mine. That's it. That's all that it is. This is why, you know, the more you think about this, the more you realize how selfish the mind has become thanks to ignorance and attachment, thanks to ego. How selfish it becomes. You have to do what you can. So again, this doesn't mean, right? Take, you know, when I tell you these things, I have to also tell you that, you know, this doesn't mean you have to do everything. Let's say, for example, let's say your neighbor's cupboard is messy. This doesn't mean you should clean it. Because sometimes, you know, they might not want you to do that. This is talking about the feeling that you have. This is talking about the feeling that, you know, this is my cupboard, that's their cupboard. These are two different things. That feeling is wrong. That feeling is something that shouldn't be there. No, this is a cupboard, that is a cupboard. A cupboard is a cupboard. Or let's say the person next to you has left their fan on. I mean, you should off it, of course. You should turn it off. However, you should also tell them why, so they don't repeat it again. But you're turning it off not because I'm turning off someone else's fan. No, the fan should be off, so I'm going to turn it off. But I'm going to tell the person so they don't repeat it again, to give them a view. Not because it's not my fan, I'm offing someone else's fan. No, I'm offing a fan that should be off. I'm turning off a fan that should be off. That's it. So who does your energy belong to? Who does your time belong to? Who does your words belong to? Who do you belong to? Who do you belong to? You can't answer that. I am. I am. I am who? I belong where? Just nature. Just the process of nature. That's all we have to do. Just understand this is a flow of nature. Because if you really think about it, the input as well. The food that you consume belongs to who? The food that you consume belongs to who? You eat rice and carrots. You're eating rice and carrots. Rice belongs to who? Nature. Carrots belong to who? Nature. The coconut milk belongs to who? The salt belongs to who? The chili powder belongs to who? You're testing my cooking abilities. The spices belong to who? The spoon belongs to who? The pan belongs to who? It's all nature. Now, let's take you. You are the build-up of the food that you've consumed. If that's part of nature, then this is also part of nature. Your body is something that's made from the food that you consume, and if food is part of nature, that means the body is also what? Part of? Part and parcel of nature. Is part and parcel of nature. And so the output of the body is also what? Input, process, output. Inputs nature, processes nature, output nature. This is me. No, this is what? Nature. This is nature. All we have to do is see as nature. So the next time you see another person's cupboard messy, what should you do? Be one with nature. If you see something on the floor, what should you be? One with nature. If you see something that needs to be done, what should you be? One with nature. Because it's not you who has to sow. It's not someone else that has to sow. Sowing has to be done. It doesn't matter from who. See, let's say, you're washing some clothes. Whose clothes should you be washing? You wash? I'm washing my clothes. Because why? They belong to me. But washing is a process that belongs to who? Washing is a process that belongs to who? It doesn't belong to anyone. So if you think that, no, I'm only going to be washing my clothes. Other person, you know, let them do what they want. I'm going to be washing my clothes. Then what are you doing? You're stealing from nature. You're saying this energy that comes out of this can only belong to who? Me and my things. Honestly, you should be able to wash your clothes without feeling that's yours. And wash someone else's clothes without feeling that someone else's. See, try this, right? In a bucket. Try this, right? In a bucket, have two clothes. Your clothes and someone else's. And wash them both. See if you feel that one of them is different from the other. See if you feel that one of them is different from the other. The thing is, the funny thing is, your mind will pick up. It's in the bucket and it's been, say you're soaking in the bucket. Somehow, you will know which one is yours. From either something, you'll find out which one is yours. And then you'll feel, the moment you realize the one that is yours. See if you treat it differently. See, that's not saying you'll wash it any better. Because in the monastery, normally what do we do? We wash the other person's clothes better. However, if you feel a difference between these two clothes, it's a problem there. Because these clothes are just clothes. None of those belong to you, but yet you feel one of them to be different. Why? Ignorant attachment. Be part of nature. Wash. See if you feel a difference. Let's say you get the opportunity to wash someone that you highly respect. So something of theirs. Let's say, for example, you get the opportunity to wash Guru Hamdra's robe. If you feel that this is very special, extremely special, then there's something wrong. I mean, of course you should be washing it with utmost devotion and whatnot, but if you feel it's special, there's an issue. Let's say you get Guru Hamdra's robe and you get in your seniority order, the one below you, you get their patkara. You get Guru Han's patkara and their patkara. And in the bucket or the basin, there is three patkaras. Your patkara, Guru Han's patkara, and in the seniority order, the one below you, their patkara. Their prayer mat. When you're washing, see if you feel a difference. See if you can feel a difference. If you can come and tell me that, you know, I don't feel a difference whatsoever, will I be able to get Guru Han's patkara? We'll see. But try. Actually try. Put this and try. Because you are part of nature. You are part of nature. If you feel any differently, you're stealing. You're stealing what should belong to everyone. You're stealing something that should belong to anyone. to try. I mean, I'm actually telling you to try. Try taking two clothes and see if you feel a difference. Do you want even better? Take two of your clothes and see if you feel a difference. This is my old kit. This is my new kit. I like my new kit because it's new. My old kit has some stains. And if you feel a difference while washing your both kits, then again, you are taking part of nature. You see a difference. Both of them are what? Both of them are nature. This is why, you know, these are very subtle things. Very subtle things. I mean, not very subtle. They are subtle, though. They are subtle. But they are also what? How we steal from nature. This is why test yourself. Test yourself, and test yourself. Give yourself these exams. See if you can go. If we took the, you know, in the monastery, we have these seniority orders. Those are placed conventionally. There is no other way that we do it. Literally, if you come first, you get a number. That's how it works. First come, first serve. There's not that, there's no other way that it's made. However, see if you can, you know, take, it's like, you know, if you can take something of the lowest person, the one who has the last person in this order. Because remember, that person is a person. The only reason they have that number, they're the last person in the order, is because they came last. But they're just the same, are they not, as yourself? So can you not go and ask them for something? Just like you might go and ask your teachers, you go to your teacher and you ask them, can I do something for you? Can't you do something for the last person? You should be able to. Because why? You are nature. It doesn't matter who. You are part and parcel of nature. You should be able to help every single person. Regardless. But because of ignorant attachment, you feel what? I'm different. I'm separate. I am higher than the other person. You know, I have a higher number than the other person. Therefore, they should be helping me, not I should be helping them. Says who? Says ignorant attachment. Nature says what? You are nature. Help everyone. Help everyone. So try these. No, you know, try these. Whatever you can, try these. I would, you know. You will, if you feel a difference, then, practice. If you feel a difference, practice. But the more you challenge yourself, the more you're able to see your defilements. Okay. So I do have some messages. First one is that after the sermon, we do have Buddha Puja, which again, you're all invited, as well as we have the discussions happening here at 12. And we have Vesak coming up on the, if I'm correct, the first next month, 1st of May. Yeah, I mean, that's like literally about next week, isn't it? Vesak came. That's a, you know, the way
I don't know about you, but it feels as though I'm still in like January or February right now. But you know, it's May. May is coming up and Vesak is there and it's a big festival. So please do come and join us in the celebration. As well as it's a very nice time to invite people to come to the masjid as well, because we decorate the place and we do so much. As well as, of course, please do join in any meritorious activities that we have. There'll be lots of things to help out with, decorations and all these things. So it's on the 30th of May, right? So not the 1st, the 30th. Still, right, there are so many activities that we can do, right? So many different activities. And I was celebrating We're celebrating the key. The key that unlocked the doors for our own liberation. So it's a very special, very special festival, which we all do come and celebrate. So please do come and help out with those things. Do we have any other messages? Perfect. Okay, let's take a few moments to transfer merits and conclude today's sam. Okay, let's take a moment to transfer all the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listening to Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how very fortunate we are to be in receipt of Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to the generation of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits that we will acquire to all the members of the Mahasangha present of the world, including all chief political chapters, who have dedicated their lives to no path and commit themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget among them will be the monks and nuns residing in local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let's also take a moment, transfer merits to Guru Sannanse, as well as other monks resident in the monastery, as well as Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's take a moment to transfer merits and express our gratitude to those who made great efforts to spread the teaching of the Buddha, be it thereby translated in Sanskrit, share them out with others, inviting others to join them. May by the power of the merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer merits that we require to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha shelter, alms, roads, medicines, as well as those who pass on their no-hucks and their well-wishes. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, and all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any shape or form. By the power of the merits, may they be healed and infused in mental ailments, may they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress, may they abstain from meritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sigma and transfer merits to devas, brahmas, spirits, demons, primary and sakadevas, new ones, gods and deities who have committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let's not forget among them will be our garden deities who keep a watchful eye of us, keep us out of harm's way. May the power of the merits, may they prosper divine power with them. May they abstain from meritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all that have been friends and home to us in this even long journey in samsara. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those lost lives in the world be the friend of foe. Rejoice in the merits required today. It's also to take a moment to transfer merits to all the lost lives, natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics, reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this even long journey in samsara. May by the power of the merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill their meritorious deeds, fulfill them with eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, so resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits acquired through the day, may we be a witness the event of hundreds of thousands of Arathmahinvanses in this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits acquired through the day, may you and I and everyone who made this program a success become an Arathmahinvanse or Arathmahinvanse in this very life in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of Narvacha Bhajan be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginen midetnva Dvesha ginen midetnva Moha ginen midetnva Nibbana parama sukhain Sukita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhain Sukita taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka Siyalu satnvayo Nibbana parama sukhain Sukita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhain Sukita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhain Sukita taravetnva Raga gini niveva Dvesha ghini niveva Moha ghini niveva Nivan sepa labeva Nivan sepa labeva Nivan sepa labeva Tunrongi Suisyananta Mahogany Billion. See Lokasu Satyoma. Nibbana Parma Sukhin Sukhita Vipta.